let's talk about me searching for it on Webtoon and not finding it at all anymore.
Oh yeah, like, let's talk about the funny things that you find instead of the evil life.
Yeah, exactly. Like True Beauty. It's a it is a drama of some sort. Honey, Honey Wedding is one of the suggested search results.
That sounds nice.
Basically, and for some reason, Webtoons has switched languages to French on my in my browser for some reason. That might be why I'm not finding it for some reason. But if I Google it, I do find I find The Evil Life on Webtoons. I'm going to search for it in this window instead. I'm just going to type Evil Life and see what pops up. Evil Life. Nope. Oh, shoot. We looked and looked, it says, but we couldn't find anything for Evil Life.
Oh, wow. That's harsh.
What happens if you search for it? Have they just removed us from the search engine? Because we're still up. Like, we are, our stuff's still up. But
let's see what happens. I'm going to search for it right now. So, you know, potentially we're talking about chapters 10 through 12, the end of our, what was it? Was it like season one? Was it
volume? Let's call it, let's call it. Like, season sounds nice, because it did. We did cover all of this fall, and wait, we start in the summer.
June, I think?
Yeah, June's like more than, June 18th. It's more than a season, really.
Yeah.
So volume one, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. We're done with the first arc, volume one.
And we're launching into the second one, and it will be beginning. Let me check my little calendar here. If I remember correctly, it's going to start on January 14th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
January 14th.
And you know what?
As of this recording, it's,
it's the 5th? Almost the 6th for you?
It's almost, in a few hours. I mean, we are in different time zones, but yeah, it's still the 5th. It'll be up in a little more than a week.
So my intent is when this podcast rolls out, which our listeners will be able to see, I'm going to put up a collected edition of our first arc for everybody to dig into. I think I'll probably put it on Gumroad. That's like a pretty good website. But I'll also have it downloadable just from my website as well. So the same place that people are going to get if they read the webcomics in the wider format on our website, then they can read them. They can download the PDF there too. But I'm going to have that up for everybody to read, to be on track. Hopefully the Webtoon search will be up and running by that point, because I'm going to post a little notice to let people know that the webcomic's returning in a week. And you know, because right now I search The Evil Life, and it's just all results just randomly starting with The.
Thanks, Webtoons.
The Red King, The Strange Tales of Oscar something. Let's see if I actually hit.
Well, I get zero results right now, so.
That's really weird.
Well, I think again, it's. I think I switched to French, the French version.
Okay, check this out though. And I'm sorry about your French switch, but I do have good news for you.
Okay. Yep.
I typed it in and then I hit return, and it does. It shows you the quote originals first, which they call them originals, but they're the ones that actually the website has commissioned people to make, or is people are earning money off being on the platform. Oh, yeah. But Canvas, which is the new name for their user-submitted stuff.
Well, that's us.
We're the top result.
Oh! We're the top... We've made it. We finally made it. We're the top result for the search when you search for The Evil Life.
Yeah, of our own title.
Of our own title. That's quite the achievement.
That's really good stuff. Shout out to our 50 subscribers.
I am honestly like really. Did you just log into 15 different accounts and subscribe to the comic? Is that what happened?
I'm not gonna say that... I didn't do that.
Oh well,
I didn't. No. But I am one of the subscribers.
I don't know if I am one of the subscribers.
I'm the first like on every comic that gets posted, and I have no shame in saying that.
I am zero likes, I think, on any of the comics.
No, but you did reply to somebody once.
Oh, yeah, I did. I did reply to, it was the gruesome one when Hester gets really hurt. And someone had a comment and it said, poor Hester. And I did reply to that one. Because I agree. I feel really bad for Hester in that chapter. And,
I think I feel bad for Hester in every chapter.
I kind of feel bad for all the characters. Like, let's talk about how bad we feel for Blarf, because he's the main character in chapter 10, one of the chapters we're talking about today. I feel really bad for Blarf. Why did you... well, let's ask the writer of this little webcomic. what spurred you to write, "Giddy up, ya freak"?
Yeah, that was harsh, wasn't it?
That was harsh, like calling him. He's all pimpled in that one as well.
Yeah, because really,
he's a teen.
That was your reasoning. He was a teenage alien.
Yeah. It's to show progression of time. So yeah, he's a little older in that one. He grows up in every panel. He's like a little older in every panel.
Why does Blarf get tortured so much? I guess my thought was, you know, how fucking lucky. Sorry, are we swearing? Yeah, we're swearing on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, sure.
How lucky is Superman that he ended up looking just like an attractive human, mm-hmm. and that he ended up with this super loving family who just wanted to teach him all kinds of good lessons and help him have a good childhood? I love that. That's so terrific. I think it's wonderful. But I feel like the vast majority of aliens crashing down to Earth, especially in rural America, would not be so lucky. And so all I was thinking about was all the shit that they'd have to endure being this thing that if the people decided to keep this creature, probably wouldn't see it as something comparable to them. They'd see it as some kind of weird, I don't know, tool or something like that, you know, which is kind of how I perceived Mike and Sarah thinking about Blarf, who looks maybe more like a bug than a human.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Clark, you need to appreciate your privilege.
That's
what you need to do. Yeah. I mean, Blarf doesn't even have depth perception. He only has one eye. Right off the bat, he is at a disadvantage to Clark Kent. Kent, obviously, Superman.
That was my thought. When you were bringing a story to life, what were you thinking?
Right. Oh, I was thinking like this would be a lot of fun. Like I get to draw a horse butt pooping. It's a really weird thing. Like he instead of being instructed to pick it up, well, he seems to misunderstand the purpose of the job. He doesn't have to catch him he does say catch a bundle of them nuggets. It's a weird chore. He could just wait for him to drop to the ground. That was really interesting.
I think that was my first intentionally humiliating chore.
Yeah, this is unnecessarily cruel. for some reason, he's really happy about it as well. Like he's still. I think you described him as like naive in that shot. Like he's supposed to be like he doesn't really know that he's being put through. He's jumping through hoops at this point.
Yeah, I thought at first it would feel like a game. But then as he has to paint a fence that goes on for miles and he has to pull a plow or be the scarecrow, I'm imagining he's maturing, because I think our idea was, I have to say, we didn't necessarily state this anywhere with exposition per se, but he ages differently than humans is the idea.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you know, he's growing up more like just a faster timeline. And so, you know, this is maybe a few months of him living on the farm, or maybe a year. I don't know. We're not too specific.
No, but we never really address. We never really address it, and we don't really care as much. But if we think about the progression of the story is taking place, as we're jumping through back and forth between chapters, as events taking place for basically simultaneously, we're probably looking at months.
I think that sounds about right, and. My thought is that if he's aging, he's going from being a child to a teenager to a young adult in this space of time. He's going to go through the feelings that most teenagers go through, which is, you know, as a kid, you're looking to find all the fun in everything you do. But as you learn more about life and you learn more about what makes you happy and sad and all that stuff, you maybe realize that the rules that are set in place for you where you live aren't always conducive to you enjoying your life. So I'm kind of having him go through a little bit of that, you know, feeling that angry with these people that he's living with. Which I don't want to call his parents. I don't feel like that would be fair.
I looking at these panels, I'm sort of realizing that this is a whole story of on its own. Like this would be a book or two, just him, like a coming of age story. We're basically skimming through like a major part in his development and life. And oh, and you know what? Just gonna derail everything. We haven't addressed the fact that he has a name now. We've been calling him Blarf. But this is actually the first time we actually get to hear his name.
Yeah, this chapter 10, it gets stated explicitly by I think Sarah says it.
Yep, she. It's time to paint the fence, Blarf.
It's a cruel name.
We've only been calling him the alien up until this purposefully, because this is the first time we actually see his name. Yeah. It is a cruel name, but is it his name by birth? We don't really know.
I would assume not.
Yeah.
I tried to make it seem like it's not, but maybe it is.
We don't really know. 'Cause his mom only calls him son.
Yeah. Yeah. And so speaking of mom.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of mom.
Fitting into the subversion of the Superman trope. He discovers the rocket ship that he came in on. And yeah,
sweet. That's a sweet rocket ship.
Yeah, it's real sweet. I love your design of that. And he gets to meet a hologram of his parent.
Mm-hmm.
And the main difference here is that when Clark discovers the hologram of his parents, that's like a big, you know, it's like a big turning point in his maturity and everything.
Wait, I have four parents that love me?
Right.
So it's kind of like that, yeah.
Yeah, so now Blarf finds out that he has maybe like a half a parent that loves him. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Sort of, yeah. Like, it's hard to say. I mean, she doesn't really know him, like, so.
Yeah, so she doesn't want to, like, commit
kind to of, the...
Yeah.
To quote, I might love you, I just... don't know for sure, since I sent you away before you developed a personality or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So, yeah, Blarf's mom's kind of a jerk. Mm-hmm. But
she could have lied. I mean, she's being unnecessarily honest.
Yeah, very much so. I would agree with that. But, you know, she's a talented scientist that was able to get him off the planet so he could live an unremarkable life somewhere else.
Oh, yeah, and she picked him instead of herself for the spaceship. I mean, albeit it is a bit small, but she might have been able to fit.
Yeah, so that was a bit selfless, maybe.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, here's a sign of progression, by the way. The cows, they're basically still alive in all the panels and all the shots. There are only two cows in the barn, and they're the same size, and they're all still alive, which sort of at least... because cows don't live as long as people, obviously, and that at least should hint at the fact that this goes by pretty quickly, like his aging process.
That's very wise.
Oh, yeah, I think that was intentional. Let's say it was. It was definitely intentional.
Yeah, I know it was.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, the we have the luxury of having not only lots of time to reflect on these and tighten up the way that we tell the story, because a lot of, as we mentioned in our earlier episodes, a lot of this was drawn intended to go in a different order, a lot of these panels.
Yep, like some are way older than others.
Yeah, and I think even the first few panels of this were intended to go at the end of the scene of Blarf's rocket crashing on Earth, and then we would cut to him fully grown, which was the last panel of this, but instead we inserted the hologram thing.
That's right.
In the middle, to kind of give it some more depth. And I like that scene a lot. I think that was a lot of fun. In fact, I think this was the first ever chapter we fully lettered, and then I scrapped half the letters and redid them.
And even though they were great the first time around, they're even, because she is like, the mom is even worse in the new one, in the new version.
The dialogue got an update along with the actual appearance of the letters too. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we've had the luxury of being able to go back and kind of hopefully make this feel very cohesive as everybody's reading it. And so, yeah, I think we imply pretty clearly that Blarf is growing differently than somebody else might. I think, what did I say? That Aileen has grown at a miraculous rate in the first caption.
His dish, I'm just noticing a little detail that
I've
completely forgotten. His bowl or dish or whatever you want to call it, says Blarf on it.
It does. And
what
and
does it say in Chapter 7? It doesn't. They wrote the name after they named him. But it's the same doggy. It's the same dish, but without the name on it.
Yeah.
Wow. That is, like, there is a continuity and there is progression of time that makes... I'm sort of glad that past me sort of did that, because I could have easily... That I thought of that. That is... Wow, that is great. I love that.
Yep, past you. You made really good past choices.
Me. Thanks, past me. By the way, past me. Pre-owned nails, that is my favorite brand of nails.
Oh, I know.
If you look at the page, I know that. I love that brand of nails. It's an in-universe. I think they have an ad somewhere later on in the comic. I'm not going to spoil it too much, but I think it shows up again. It's just to make it clear, we're talking about panel 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Panel 7. Yeah, that's panel 7.
Panel 7 of which version? Of
chapter 10. Oh, on the Webtoons version, not the evillife.com version. Sorry.
Because people are reading this, if you haven't tried out both Webtoon and the version that we're hosting, you're getting different versions of the comic. One is wider. You get more of Mills' great art in it and more jokes potentially and different pacing, just because when it goes to Webtoon and it gets, I don't know what you would say, scrunched. I mean, we don't actually scrunch it, but you know what I mean.
No, but I mean, some of the background details, like you miss out on the toilet with the fuzzy seat.
I do like that.
The VHS with the sad post-it note on it, the sad smiley with the post-it note implying that it's broken.
Yeah.
We lose out on Blarf's number 2 bucket. He has a bucket and it says number 2, which implies that is his toilet.
Yeah, because the toilet is broken.
Yeah. And for some reason, a picture frame with a cow on it in the same shot, but far to the left, because why not? Like, stuff like that.
Yeah.
The watering pot is broken. It's rusted. It has a hole in the bottom. They should throw that out. Why do they? It's just full of junk, the barn,
basically. It really is. Mike and Sarah run a terrible farm.
It's all there to imply that everything's just half working, broken. They're cheap, basically.
It's a depressing place.
Telling a story through background junk, basically.
Yeah. And the good news is that this is not a permanent lifestyle for our alien buddy.
He does look a little fed up at the end of the chapter. Yeah. So that was chapter. Do you want to say anything else about chapter 10?
I feel good. I'm good. I'm done. I have a lot of closure about chapter 10.
Chapter 11 is not as detailed heavy. It's a very different chapter. It is because it's supposed to be a little bit, I guess, a little bit much more somber. It's a little bit just like the training montage chapter. It's supposed to almost like mirror that in seriousness and tone and stuff. Even though we are looking at a like marmot having a serious conversation with a marmot mutant human hybrid. What do you want to say about chapter 11?
This one was interesting to write. I feel like maybe when I think back on it, I feel like it was a very short conversation in my head. And it's not that it's long. It's, you know, it's maybe 15 panels or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I feel like these two, they actually, they dig into a lot of stuff in this conversation, Jerry and Hester.
They definitely do. I know what you mean. It's like it feels a lot longer than 15 panels. And I think it's the era, it has an air of seriousness to it as they're conversing. And I really like Jerry's body language as well.
Oh.
Like as he's trying to explain to Hester, like, you don't get it. Like,
I love
he cannot
that.
Stay here. He's pacing and he is and she tries to sort of reason with him. And when she shushes her, I think that's probably like my favorite part of this whole chapter.
It's really good. I think it's one of my favorite moments in the story. It's just, you know, it really sums up the relationship.
Yeah. Oh, we're still looking at like a marmot. It's the, oh, I love how we treat Jerry. There is no irony. There is no, there's no wink to the audience or anything like that. It's just completely serious. Like, Jerry is probably like the most, like, fundamentally, he is probably the most serious and down to earth, pun not intended, character, because, you know, he's a marmot, down to earth anyway, character in the story. And I love it. He is genuinely like a person, even though he's an animal. And and you can sort of sense that it's tough for him to let her go. He doesn't do this like he feels that she has failed the marmot community. And
he really does feel that way.
Yeah, because and it was really rude of her to step on the birds. That was just gratuitous.
When I look back on it, I think it was rude of us to have her step on the birds even.
Yeah,
I am completely sympathizing with him here.
Yeah, it was our fault. Yeah. I mean, because it makes sense. Like, she thinks of marmots as people at this point, but she didn't really realize that they might think of birds as people.
Yeah.
And when you look at the path she's taking in the story, this is definitely one of those like formative moments where she definitely grows as a character. I can't believe we're talking about like this dialogue with this marmot. But yeah, it really is. It's a moment of growth, and she definitely has like one of the stronger arcs in this story as a whole.
She probably gets, you know, 1.5 times the page time that the other characters get. Or panel time, if you will. And this is one of those moments that we don't necessarily get to see in the same way, I don't think, with Gloom or Blarf as things go on. I mean, we do see a lot of great things with them, but Hester really gets the character development meat, if you will. And I think that this moment with Jerry is maybe one of her meatiest.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's sort of what you get into when you create like a dynamic character that has an arc that needs that level of growth.
Yeah.
Not to give too much away, but Gloom is definitely more of a, like a static character. He is more complete in his worldviews and his goals for life. And I mean, that's not to say that he doesn't have to overcome challenges and has to learn from his experiences, but he is still more at his core. He is more consistent with who he is, while Hester sort of has to reevaluate her worldviews.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Yeah, maybe if, you know, if you would think of Blarf more as, not to be too harsh, but like a bit of a passive character, and that a lot of things happen to him. And with Gloom, things happen. Gloom makes choices, but those things, they're all kind of relatively consistent with who Gloom is. With Hester, it's like she makes choices, and the way that those play out, yeah, like dynamic. They're very like, you know, there can be a lot of unintended consequences from the choices that she makes, that she sets out to, you know, as opposed to just being things that happen.
And I think both her and Gloom, definitely, they're definitely more active characters than Blarf, but the difference is, they'd react totally differently to those experiences as well, which I think is sort of the dynamic that this group, well, they're not a group yet, but we do know that these characters, obviously this is not a huge spoiler, but our stories will, we've addressed this in past episodes as well, this podcast, but that they will eventually, their paths will cross eventually. And them having these different dynamics is definitely important for the story.
Yeah, I think it's made it a lot of fun for us telling the story, because some of the stuff we spoke about ahead of time, but some of it just kind of organically evolved as we're coming up with these characters. And I think we're fortunate in that we picked up on a lot of what each other was going for with the details that we added to it. And yeah, I think we always kind of intended Hester to be like, maybe the fact that she is a bit less sure about herself at points in time has given her the ability to have more of this development, whereas like somebody like Gloom tends to be very sure of who he is at any given point in time. And well, I don't know, it's not really clear exactly how Blarf approaches that, but yeah. As we get more into the story, you do get to see development with the way Blarf approaches being passive versus being active.
Yeah, plus we need to remember that he's really inexperienced and young, so in terms of Blarf's, the way Blarf reacts to things, it's basically everything's new to him, so he's always a bit naive and overly positive to most new experiences, because it, and basically whatever he experiences, it almost always is better than life on the farm. So we're not there yet, but still, like, everything's better to what we've read in chapter 10. So I think that probably explains his level of positivity as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to think about it. I look forward to people getting a chance to read a lot of the stuff that Blarf gets to do as the story goes on, because I feel like it it's fun. It was fun to tell that. It was fun to take that character to those places and seeing where he's at in chapter 10 versus seeing where he will go, I think is really cool. Whereas for Hester, I feel like she has a lot of ups and downs from here.
Is chapter 13 the Blarf, the next Blarf chapter?
It's not. When we reopen, when we pick up on our second arc or season of the Evil Life, which is going to be called Finding Evil, because Growing Evil is complete. I just forgot that that's how we did it.
Yeah.
Until right now. So Growing Evil is done. When we start Finding Evil, we're going to begin with Hester.
And it's gonna I know which one. Yeah, that's a great one.
Shortly after, it's going to be a direct, basically where this where chapter 11 ends with her kind of status uncertain, you're going to get an immediate answer to where what she's doing now.
I love that chapter. Yeah, that one.
Oh, it's so good. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What I also love is the fact that for once, I think this might be the first time in one of these episodes, we actually have one chapter per character, and it's so distinctly them as well, because Blarf's chapter so far has basically been him being a baby. This is the first time we actually see Blarf. So now we get like three full chapters with our three main characters as well.
Really do. That's
a good one with Gloom.
Oh, I love chapter 12.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, this was one of the later chapters that like physically that we made, you know.
And it's so artsy, right? Like I think we started playing around way more in the later chapters as well, like graphically, as well. And not only graphically, but I mean, it's obviously also in the script. It says something to the effect of like Gloom looking through a tidal wave or something like that before we pan out and see that he's actually by the water cooler. But
I gotta be honest, that feels like that was your idea, though.
You think?
I think it was.
Was it? I can't. Well, I mean, sure, I could have made that up, but I don't think so. Was it?
I don't anyway. Know. It's hard to say because we plotted all this stuff together first.
Yeah. It's so muddled up.
And occasionally I'd sneak a little thing we hadn't spoken about into it. But it's hard to say. I'm just thinking back on it and I'm saying that feels like something that you would have suggested, like he should start by doing this. But I could be wrong.
Anyway, we have the tidal wave.
It's a good idea. I want you to take credit for it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'd like to thank my mom, and I'd like to thank... But you know, I really like how the wave and his glare really mirrors what he's thinking as well. Like, he is so enthralled by himself that he is never in the moment. That's sort of Gloom's thing, I think. He's always like passionately imagining himself somewhere else.
I think that's always true.
He's never really happy. He's always going for the next thing.
And you know why I think I like this chapter so much? Because we did it as one of the last additions to the story. And when we first started work on the evil life, we really, most of our effort went into detailing Gloom's time at this office, but not this section of his time at this office.
That's true. That's true.
So for me, it was really fun to revisit that and imagine, or kind of fill in the gaps, maybe to kind of bridge Gloom at home working in his lab to Gloom being in this office with this particular story here, showing how he is actively attempting to avoid committing any of his mental capacity to this job.
Oh yeah, yeah, like he is just like making time go by. And oh, this is the first time. Is this the first time we see Steve?
This is, I think, Steve's first appearance. Yeah.
Right. So Steve is sort of a weird amalgamation of different things. I don't think we've ever actually discussed the inspiration for this guy. But he is like a combination of, oh, I don't remember the guy's name. The boss from Office Space. The annoying. Yeah. So he's an amalgamation of that. I think a little bit of Dwight Schrute from The Office as well.
Yeah.
The shirt, like the yellowish shirt. As well as the cell phone belt clip thing is also pretty like shrewd-ish. By the way, this is not drawn.
Let's be honest, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you started drawing this, I think cell phone belt clips were still in fashion.
Well, they were, but this was not. I actually had to think about this for a while, but this is not pre-smartphone era, though. Like he is consciously, because we have smartphones.
Yeah.
In a couple of shots as well. So this is one of the holdouts. One of the guys who's like, nope, I'm sticking with my flip phone, on a belt clip.
You know, I gotta say, this is Steve is very true to my experience of working in an office, and Gloom is very much me in the office, which was I would do anything to not be thinking about the office when I was in there, and I was trying to avoid any and all interactions with Steve's.
This Steve is a little bit of a rebel, though. He has a bunch of pencils in his pocket, but no pocket protector. So he's a little, like a little bit of a wild card.
Yeah.
And he's definitely your creation. I based him on different, like, characters, and, but he is definitely, in terms of attitude and the relationship to Gloom, all yours.
Thanks.
Are we still calling him Steve the Asshole, by the way? Because that's his nickname.
Like, I think it's just in the scripts.
It's just in the scripts, yeah, because that's his unofficial name is Steve the Asshole. Yeah. Which is so unfair, because he's really not a bad guy or anything. He's just a little, like... he looks... I love when they reach the elevator. We're on chapter 12 right now. I think we already said that. But
yeah.
When they reach the elevator, he looks so tired and a little sad, and he looks at Gloom. It's just a little, like when Gloom says, sure, Gloom talks to himself, like he says yes, but I kind of like the air of seriousness. Like they're all actually at their jobs. Gloom is just this guy who's in a completely different place. The elevator scene is basically one of my favorites, and the daydreaming part is great, but I like the contrast between reality and the stuff that's actually going on in Gloom's head.
I love Gloom's great idea of what his future could be.
Yeah, his roommates.
Because isn't that really what we want our futures to be? All of us, collectively. Living some kind of cool... barbarian life with some awesome friends.
Like, who doesn't want to be, I guess, He-Man, I think, is a major inspiration for this.
I guess he's kind of like a weird Skeletor He-Man.
He is. Oh, yeah, that's right. He is sort of like a combination between He-Man and Skeletor. And he has his logo, always, as always. He has his logo on.
But any good
He-Man
should.
Exactly, because branding is everything. And, I kind of like how he already imagines his roommates being one big alien and a female fighter type. It's a little foreboding. Maybe there's a little magic in him, which we obviously know there is. So if we want to explain as daydreaming in any way is that he might have a little bit of foresight in him. That's not in the script, but if we want to make this make any sense, like, because it's not that far away from. But the Super Blarf, I really like Super Blarf.
He's great.
Like the pink one, yeah, with the tusks and the spikes and three eyes, four arms. Yeah, that's it's not a bad version.
Yeah, he's got that really cool laser cannon that you drew. I love that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the laser cannon with the, like, it looks like it would. Ooh, you know what? That laser cannon, the ray, is pretty similar to the ray we have in our other comic.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking. It's basically that
type of laser.
Yeah, it looks like it's straight out of our underwater koala story.
Yup, it kind of is. Like, not only the beam, but the whole laser cannon itself. It has, like, that sort of style to it. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got a way of drawing technology like that. You got your own technology language.
Yeah, I tried to do, like, different things with different. But yeah, I mean, Blarf's ships is purposefully supposed to look as alien as possible. Like, we're supposed to recognize it as a ship, but other than that, it's supposed to look like non-Earth-like. But yeah, this one has my more, not my generic, but more like, it definitely, plus it has the color scheme as well of something from that story. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it does.
Something out of that story.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, we're in 2020. It's a new year. We're halfway through the work we've done on the Evil Life. And I'm hoping that pretty soon we won't just be saying underwater koalas when we're talking about that story. We'll be saying the name and we'll be talking about when you can read it. So hopefully it'll be this year even.
Might be. Who knows?
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
I mean, it's almost done. So
Speaking of almost done. We've reached the end of this chapter by talking about the daydream. Yeah. And it sets us up, I think, really nice for finding evil. And if the idea of growing evil is you're watching these characters, growing and forming and sort of like figuring out what they want, at least somewhat figuring out what they want in their lives, finding evil is going to be all about them, well, finding each other, I guess you could say, right?
Yep. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. In a way suitable for the style of this book.
Uh-huh.
Obviously.
There's a lot of fun to be had. And I think that it might actually be a bit longer. Chapter wise, it's about the same number of chapters, but I think that panel count, there might actually be a lot more to come in the first half of this year for everybody reading The Evil Life.
I think you're right. And I think we still have a bunch of my favorite chapters left as well. I think I'm saying, I think every time we reach a chapter, it's like my favorite chapter.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way too.
I change my mind all the time, but some chapters will have like favorite panels in them, like chapter 12 with Bloom daydreaming in the elevator and stuff. But I think, a few of the upcoming ones are like really. Oh, I like the one that will probably be Blarf's. You know why? I can't even describe it. That'll give too much away.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you later. Yeah.
You can tell me.
Yeah.
Because I know all the chapters.
Yeah. But what else is there to say? I think these are all pretty short and sweet and easy to discuss. I think they all are. These are some of the few that I think are better reads at theevillife.com. Like, most of the time, a lot of these look great on Webtoons. But I think, especially the daydreaming panels, have a lot more fun stuff going on. And I think the background stuff and the Blarf chapter as well are a lot better on theevillife.com. Usually, I don't really care about Webtoons or not, but I think in this case, it's definitely better to go to theevillife.com.
I agree. Gloom has a lot more information in his daydream alone. And I got to tell you, those daydream panels were really tricky to fit into Webtoon to show all the information that needed to be shown.
Like,
I had to slide things around.
I saw that, like the trickery and how you managed. It was really impressive. Like you moved him.
Luckily,
you moved him closer to like the daydream, and you
yes.
Like, you made the like the thought balloon bigger. All of that worked great.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, it's because you, the way that when I'm lettering, I've got the art from you on just enough layers that I can pretty much move everything around that I need to move around.
We kept the layer structure.
Yeah, and everything's so high res, and it's, so it's not a problem to go in and tweak. You know, it takes a few minutes. You go and you tweak it, you slide it over a little bit, and you know, the only thing I do have to say, my one regret, if I'd were to have done this differently, is that when I do the final version that goes up on Webtoon, those versions are just at the resolution that they are in Webtoon. So each panel is like, I don't know, I forget, like 800 by 620 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll never have a high res version of what's on Webtoon.
Right.
But in a way it's cool, because then that's, you know, makes it its own reading experience. So whatever you see, as the way that you see it on there, you're only ever going to see it just like that on there.
Yeah, and it's sort of built for you to view on your phone and your tablet. It's not really supposed to like look. I mean, sure, higher resolutions would be great, would look crisper, but still, it looks fine on Webtoons. But definitely better on LeaveALive.com, especially the panel with Super Blarf firing the laser cannon and Super Hester. You can't even see like the alien she's stabbing. I think it's supposed to be some sort of version of the Martian Manhunter or something, like an alien, other alien.
Yeah, they're because
of the green blood.
Fighting a Justice League, kind of.
Well, basically, yeah, like a couple of caped crusaders. Obviously, Batman. I mean, she's obviously choking Batman. And if you're not reading it, the minute I said choking Batman, that's your cue to look at chapter 12, because obviously. That's something you have to see. So she's choking Batman, and they're basically kicking ass.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
What's happening? Yeah,
I like her. I like her unnecessary tail.
Oh yeah, I forgot about the tail. She's a cat, I think. Because she's still themed. Just like Hester is a marmot, she is I guess she's a cat.
Yeah.
And obviously the completely unnecessary boob window is there because, you know, it's Gloom's version of a perfect like trio of villains, and in his version, his comrade has a boob window. So it's not a reflection of us, but more of him as a character. Like, well, what would he think looks great?
I think that's true. No, I was just going to say, I like the little Superman that's up in the corner. I'm curious about him.
Yeah, who's that? Like, is he going to... He's probably going to... I mean, this is Gloom's fantasy after all, so he's probably going to get his ass handed to him as well.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. What would be interesting, we haven't actually explored this, is if any of these heroes are actually in the LeaveALive universe or not. Like, these are just... his fantasy, all of them. But
you know, that's something that's really fun about Finding Evil, is that not only do their worlds expand, but we get to see a lot more of their world. It's actually kind of funny how limited it's been so far in what we've seen in the LeaveALive. And as we get into these next chapters, you're going to see a lot more about what the city looks like, and in particular what the people look like in Megaville.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And like just the general attitude of the people in Megaville as well. Like, what are people like in Megaville? That's one of my favorite things. We've seen a little bit of it, like how easily distracted they are when Hester hits the ground and they just see Night-Night. And that, and I guess how desensitized they are to violence in general, because they hardly flinch as she hits the pavement. And that's sort of, that at least hints at the attitude of people in Megaville, like what they're like.
It really does.
It's a strange city.
Yeah, it really is. It's a very strange, disconnected place. And I just realized as we're talking about this part of it, you know, not only can you see that wider version if you're reading the webcomic at theevillife.com or popping over to my website, nickmarino.net. But if you download the collected edition, that's going to be available at the same time that this podcast is. That's a great way, because that collected edition is all going to be in widescreen. You just put it on your laptop, hit full screen, put it on your phone or your device, turn it sideways and read it that way. And you're going to get the widescreen experience.
Yeah, that sounds super sweet.
It's going to be really good. It's going to be really high res. Yeah. It's going to be really pretty. It's going to be as we intended people to read it.
Outro?
This is our outro.
This is our outro.
This is it. It's happening.
High five.
I feel like I want to say thank you to the people who've read this so far.
Yeah.
And if you made it through this entire podcast, I'm very impressed.
And if you for some reason read it and listen to this podcast, I guess double thank you. I really can't imagine. I didn't actually imagine anyone reading it, to be honest, and even less so listening to this. This is just because it's fun discussing the. Yeah. This is basically us having fun. But if anyone actually finds any of this interesting, is there a way to comment on the podcast on nickmarino.com?
You know what? I turned off comments on my website just because the template I run on is so old and it became a mess for that. But you know what? Just send us a tweet or leave a comment on Instagram under the post about the podcast, or just leave a comment on the webcomic.
That would be great. That would be,
yeah. I'm super easy to get in touch with, just nickmarino@gmail.com. So if you email me anything, if you have longer thoughts, you know, I'll loop Mills on the conversation and we'll take it from there.
And if you have any thoughts for me, direct them at Nick Marino, because I am terrible as a person. But.
Well, you know what? You have been posting.
I have. I answered one question. I did do that.
Yeah, and you have been posting some sweet. You've been doing a sick Mandalorian helmet on your Instagram.
Oh shit! Yes. We were allowed to curse. Yes, I have. I think I have 5 followers on Instagram. I've had the account since like the beginning of Instagram. I never used it, and then I realized I want to document like one of my builds. And I work on it for like 10 minutes a day. It's not like a huge, like, I've refined the process to the point using a lot of like electrical tools as well, stuff like that to just quicken the process as much as possible. And whenever I reach any level of progress, I'll take a picture of it. Now, I posted a bunch of pictures in like every day, but in reality, a lot of them took like several days. So the Instagram posts started catching up to reality. I think I'm a little ahead of the latest post. You can actually, I guess I don't even know my handle on Instagram, if I'm going to be honest.
Is it CPanic?
CPanic, yes. Yes, it is CPanic. So if anyone actually wants to look at my Mandalorian helmet, I guess. I also post pictures of drawings that my daughter does, I guess. Oh, that's
awesome.
I love her drawings. She is my favorite artist. That and her robot. I think I need to post more of her stuff because she draws and builds things like every day. She loves that kind of stuff.
It's really good stuff.
She's 6 years old, by the way. And she's really, nobody tells her what to do. I'll just like go into her room and look at the progress she's made on whatever project she's working on. And it's always like really interesting, whatever it is. And I'll usually just ask her what it is, what the idea behind it was and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun. But that's really, I don't know why Instagram, but I figured why not try it out, I guess. And if people want to look at the helmets.
We could get some of her art into the comic.
Huh.
Maybe if we need like a cool creature in the background or something.
Oh yeah. Like we like take that, like take one of her creations as inspiration for something and just use that. It would be really cool.
Yeah. Just a thought, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No. I like it.
I'm going to keep it in mind. Cause I'd like to
It's a little like that comic Axe Cop, you know, like it's collab. it's collaborative, like an adult and a kid, and they do something, and it just like the mind of a child through the lens of an adult, something like that.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Well, I'm excited for this next 6 months or so for people to read more of this story. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I know I'm looking forward to revisiting all these chapters as we post them and share them with everybody.
Yeah, and I think I've said this before, but since you've redone some of the dialogue, it's usually a little new to me as well, which is just a lot of fun. Like rereading.
Well, I'm happy to hear. Thank you.
And you've always punched every time you punch up the script so well. So it's always better than the original.
Look, really great. I just want it to be the best reading experience for people. I want that. I want your art to have the best match it can, to have things be as cohesive and fun as possible. So that's all I'm thinking about when I do. Yeah. And I still got a few. The first maybe 3 or 4 or 5 even chapters in Finding Evil are lettered, but I think the ones after that still need to be completed. So there's more punch ups to come.
Oh yeah,
and those are some of the earliest ones that we made together in there. So
oh yeah, like that very first one.
It'll probably need a lot of updating.
Yeah.
I better get to work.
Yeah. I guess that's my cue to hang up. Oh, and this episode was not sponsored by the Mandalorian show, by the way. But go watch it anyway because it's amazing. And
yeah, that's a great show.
Yeah, it's a great show. They reinvigorated Star Wars. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, we should. Maybe our next episode we can do a little Star Wars catch up since we got the Mandalorian to talk about. Yeah. And we've got our follow up to our last Star Wars conversation to talk about The Rise of Skywalker.
It's really divisive, that one. It's really...
Did it stick the landing? I think we gotta work.
Yeah, we need to address that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's shout out to Angela Capel, one of our listeners who's been kicking it with me since the old school podcast days with the Audio Shocker, who asked us. Or let me say, she enjoyed our Star Wars conversation, I should say.
We have a listener? I didn't know. And I honestly didn't know. Okay, we have a listener.
Great. She didn't ask us to necessarily follow it up with that, but she was saying she enjoyed that part of it, so I'm sure that she wouldn't be interested to hear.
That would be great. Yeah.
What we thought of the new one. And I'm interested to find out what she thought of it, too. We haven't actually spoken about it yet, so...
Need to now we have to have a Star Wars conversation. Save your opinions though. I want to hear it live from my headphones as we discuss it. You thought of that?
I might not even need to see it again because Rosie and I saw it actually a couple days before it came out because we saw it for work for her.
I saw it a couple of days early as well, but that's only because of the European release.
Yeah, that's true. We probably saw it at the same time.
Yeah, we're a little spoiled. We get it like 2 days early or something
that. Yeah, that's the great one I saw. Yeah. And honestly, I've been so caught up in everybody else's reactions that I'm not even totally sure what I think about it anymore. So I feel like maybe I need to rewatch it before our next episode.
You know what? I'm kind of at that point as well. Like, I'm really revisiting my own opinions as I'm reading other people's opinions.
Exactly. And like, we're not going to be recording again for like a month and a half. So we got plenty of time to.
Yeah, I'm probably going to rewatch it before that. I haven't decided yet. It all depends on how much, you know, work stuff and life in general. But yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah, maybe. I'll definitely rewatch The Mandalorian before that.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm watching every episode like 2 or 3 times usually, just because so many details, so many things
to discuss.
Yeah, I guess that's that.